91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. It's about this time of year people start counting down the number of days till pitchers and catchers report to spring training. 24 days, if you're counting. We're going to talk today about some changes coming to baseball this year. Then later in the hour, what's in store for Northern Kentucky in the next couple of years. We'll hear from Vision 2015, which has been working towards the future of Northern Kentucky for a decade. Joining me first to talk baseball, Reds team historian Greg Rhodes and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. We hope to be joined soon by Inquirer sports reporter John Arardi, who we believe is en route. So, of course, there would be no trouble getting around at all today, so I can't imagine why he's not here yet. But you can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us, talk at WVXU.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What a beautiful day for opening day, right?
Oh, yes.
It's a great day to start thinking of opening day, that's for sure. It's early. Some people said, why are you talking baseball this early? But things have been happening this year, and there have been activities going on. And one of the things that happened not long ago, just recently, is expanded instant replay. Greg, can you explain what that is?
Well, it's a system that's going to be put in place now to make and a lot of people have phrased it, bringing baseball sort of into the more modern world now. I mean, it's just such an obvious move, and it's been obvious, I think, for a while. But they finally got to the point, I think, where they feel comfortable doing it. And, I mean, of course, they've had the NFL and the NHL and other sports out there, team sports out there doing it. And so they put a system in place where managers can now make a challenge on a close, controversial play. And the game will be stopped briefly, they say, for about 90 seconds is what they're anticipating. And the umpire crew will get together and actually they'll have a headset or something, but it will put them in touch with officials, Major League Baseball officials in New York City who are looking at all the replay monitors. And then they will make the decision and relay that back to the umpires on the field who will then announce it. It sounds like it's going to be a fairly good system. I'm sure there's a lot of holes in it, and as they've talked, you know, they're going to tweak the thing over the next couple of years. But I personally think it's I like it.
I think it's okay if it's not overused, if it's not, you know, overdone. I mean, obviously, you know, has to be limited to certain situations. I think obviously balls and strikes are not one of them. You know, that's still the discretion of a home plate umpire. But, you know, there have been games like the game a couple years ago where a pitcher lost a perfect game because of a bad call at first base.
But two out in the ninth inning.
Two outs in the ninth inning. And the kid lost his chance for immortality. And the umpire, you know, to his credit, came back and said, well, yeah, I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
You know, it's interesting, though. There have been some replays that are used now. Home run balls, is that what it's been in the past?
Yes. Umpires.
Yeah, right.
The umpires, and this will still be true going forward, umpires may, on their own, review a close call on a home run. So at any time during the game, they can initiate that. What this does now is let the manager make one challenge, just like in the NFL. You know, what they have three challenges that they can make, and then if they don't get it right, they lose them. And it's similar in baseball. The manager will have one challenge to make, and if they're successful at that, then they'll get one more. If they're not successful at the first one, then they
one per
done.
Game,
one
per,
done.
One per game, up maximum of two if they get the first one correct.
Right.
But I don't think it's going to slow the game down. I think it's going to add more of an interesting element for us armchair managers thinking, you know, looking at the replays and, you know, should the guy challenge that or not. And the manager's going to have to be very strategic about it. They don't want to use that challenge up too early. But then if the, you know, you kind of wait too long, it could be that you'll never have a situation in which you wanted to use it. But the other thing for the fans, and I think this is an important addition, is that because the decisions by the umpires are now reviewable, potentially, they will be showing the replays of the controversial calls, the close calls, on the scoreboard during the game. They never used to do that.
Right.
But now I think that's going to make it a more enjoyable experience for the fans all around.
So
So they'll really get to see what's been happening and
yeah, sometimes,
take a back look.
Yeah, sometimes the most, you know, pivotal play of the game wasn't being shown up on the
– Well, and the Umpires Union was able to stop that for the longest period of time. But now that's not going to be the case.
Enquirer Sports reporter John Arardi now joining us in the studio.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was home looking at instant replay, getting ready for this fine program.
You bring a dog sled over here?
Yeah, really. It's rough out there.
Yeah.
Well, we were just talking about instant replay, in fact. What's your take on it? How do you think it might change the game?
Well, I think some of the romance is going to leave the game. The Lou Piniellas of the world are few and far between. I don't think there have been that many great umpire baiters and arguers since the days of Earl Weaver and probably Lou himself. I think Clint Hurdle of the Pittsburgh Pirates is one of the last of the breed. So I'll miss that aspect of it, but I think we've seen the last few years with Dusty Baker that generally, by and large, nowadays, managers don't argue with umpires. So I think from that standpoint, the instant replay won't take away that romance, but there are going to be times, I guarantee you, where Clint Hurdle finds a way to argue whether it's an instant replay review going on or not. And that's, I think, why we all love the man so much.
Right. Yeah, it depends on the personality of the manager. You know, some of them are going to go out there and get in people's faces no matter what.
Right. And, you know, we're going to miss a little bit of that, but I say, it was by and large a
And the fans always like that, too.
Yes, it's fun. It's
Oh, it'll still happen.
Yeah.
Because if a manager uses up his challenge and then doesn't have one,
right,
he could still be out there.
Still
he's still going
right. to jaw at the umpire.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not going to go away completely.
Good point.
But as somebody said, it should shorten some of those meetings because if the manager comes running out of the dugout and he's got a challenge, I mean, all the umpires got to turn around and say, okay, you want to challenge this? Challenge it. Don't yell at me. Let's challenge it and see what it looks like.
Well, you know, you mentioned it's supposed to take about 90 seconds. Is that reality or is this going to take what people complain is already a slow game and make it even slower?
Well, I think you're going to find what you found over the past weekend with the football is it never takes as short a time as you think. It always takes longer. It's hard for some guys to make up their mind. I was watching a basketball game the other day, and I thought to myself, if this is what baseball is going to be like, let's forget instant replay because it was taking referees forever to make that particular call. And from that standpoint, I think the most difficult thing they're going to have to do is to keep it time-friendly. And I think that's up to the guys who are in New York who are viewing these plays to work under a certain stricture where whether you get it, obviously you want to get it right, but you can't take too long getting it.
Right.
And if you're going to be wrong about it, do it quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, really. Yeah.
We're talking baseball this afternoon with Enquirer sports reporter John Arardi, Reds team historian Greg Rhodes, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. If you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org, or post your comments on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk a little bit more specifically about the Reds. We'll talk about some other changes overall to the game. But there's talk now of Grady Sizemore, a former Cleveland Indian, and perhaps bringing him here to Cincinnati. What was that a good idea?
Well, I think it's a low-risk proposition. I mean, you know, he's obviously been injured, hasn't played in the last 2 years. I can remember when he came up, and it was about the same time that he was coming up and Votto was coming up. And I always said that there were three guys coming up about the same time who were going to be superstars. One of them was Votto, one of them was Sizemore, and the other one was Nate McClouth. Now, I was wrong about number three.
Two out of three is not bad.
But, you know, Grady Sizemore, when he was healthy, was as good a center fielder as there was in baseball. And if he can get any of that back, I think it's a low-risk proposition, and it's fine by me.
And what I like about him, I was looking at his numbers the other day, he has that .380 on-base percentage.
That is right.
And around here, people would kill for that, and rightly so. The only guy this year probably in this team who will go above .330 on base is Joey Votto.
Mm-hmm.
So from your standpoint of being a low-risk opportunity, I believe you're right, because you want the guys getting on base. If there's one thing this club lacks and needs to address, it's getting more guys on base, so a guy like Votto has people to drive in.
Now, obviously, we had Chu to do that last year,
right,
you know, with a high on-base percentage, but he's gone. So, you know, Sizemore might be able to fill the void.
Well, it is interesting that he set out all of last year recovering from a variety of ailments that have bothered him. I mean, pretty serious stuff, knee surgeries and back surgery and so forth. So it's really a big question mark. But as you guys have said, it's a relatively low risk. I did note that there are other teams interested in the Sizemore as well. So It's not a guarantee the Reds are going to wind up with him. But it's not going to cost us a lot to find out. And if he can come through, he'd be a very valuable, if not a starter, at least a fourth outfielder. And the bench could use that kind of help.
Somebody to back up Billy Hamilton, basically.
Right. I mean,
or Ludwig. He may be more of a corner outfielder at this point in his career. I don't know.
Yes, yeah. Right now the big issue is Billy Hamilton. Can he get on base? Because we know what happens if he does. He's fine if he gets on. That's a big issue.
You think he'll be starting?
I do, because one thing people have overlooked with Chu is that at his position, Chu was the worst defensive player in baseball last year. And among center fielders, again, that's a high position in terms of fielding ability. So to be the worst at that position is no great insult, but Billy Hamilton has the chance to be the best at his position.
Right.
And that's the one thing that gets overlooked in baseball a little bit is defense. And I think Billy's going to be a huge upgrade in center field for the Reds.
The good news about Billy, I think, is if you watch his career and watch his development, you know, up through A-ball and AA, AAA, his hitting, he tends to start off slow and then he gets better and better and better. And he listens and he learns. And he's had some pretty good instructors or mentors, you know, people like Eric Davis and Parker and, you know, guys like that who talk to him and he listens to them. So I'm not, you know, too worried about Billy Hamilton, you know, in the end. It might take him a little while, but I think he'll catch on.
Well, wasn't it Joe Morgan talking about mentors that said after watching Hamilton a couple of games last year, says, I don't think I have anything to teach him about stealing bases.
Yeah.
So it's obvious he's picking up, he's very skilled at what he does. And he's going to be one of the most exciting players. I mean, if he's getting on base once or twice a game, it's going to be a lot of excitement down at the ballpark. And potentially a very productive player for the Reds. I mean, last year, what was he, 12 for 13 or 13 for 14 in stolen bases over that three-week period of time that he came up and played, and you just energized the ballpark. I mean, you know, we all grew up in that Joe Morgan era and the Eric Davis era, and you just remember that sense of excitement when the guy got on base, and that's exactly what you could feel in the ballpark last year when Billy Hamilton was on first
base. Well, the other thing it does, too, is it makes pitchers, the opposing pitcher, just lose his mind. I mean, they just go absolutely have a meltdown when this guy is on first base. And that's good, and that leads to good things. That leads to bad pitches that guys can handle, and a Joey Votto can drive one in the gap. So, you know, the more this guy gets on base, the better it's going to be.
Yeah, the beautiful thing is he doesn't just make pitchers nervous. He makes catchers very nervous. Right. We saw that last year, Yadier Molina of the Cardinals, when he tried to throw him out and couldn't do it and was reduced to laughing behind the plate. Billy is a different breed. He's the fastest guy I've seen, really, since Eric Davis.
You talk about Billy Hamilton, of course. We mentioned the possibility of Grady Sizemore, but really not a lot of new blood coming into the team this year that we've heard about. There hasn't been, you know, we've lost people with Chu and others, but has the team done anything to really build itself up this year?
Skip Schumacher, reserve shortstop, reserve middle infielder. That's pretty much it. I think they've made a couple other. Oh, the catcher, Pena, is a nice acquisition. But you're right, Marianne. I mean, basically, it's a tough club for the marketing department to sell. There's really no shiny new toys to add to the roster, and that does make it hard to sell tickets.
Yeah.
Well, while there's not, and I would say this, you're right, we haven't had the blockbuster deal like the Latos trade from a couple of years ago or the Chu free agency signing last year. But while there aren't a lot of shiny new toys, there are still a lot of shiny toys on that team. I mean, you know, you're going to get a highlight play from Brandon Phillips almost any night you go down there. Jay Bruce out in right field, still growing, still getting better. Joey Votto, one of the top 10 hitters in the league. I know, he didn't drive in as many runs last year as everybody wanted. But almost any other hitting category you look at, he was in the top 10 last year. And then you've got the excitement out of the bullpen at the end of the game with Aroldis Chapman. And it's still going to be a fun team to watch, and I think still a very good team in 2014.
Pena, this backup catcher, from everything I've heard, is a really good clubhouse guy. People yeah. like him. I mean, you know, the guy can play. I think he's more or less a bridge until Tucker Barnhart in the minor league organization is ready to make the move to the big leagues. But, and I do think Devin Mesoraco made vast improvement last year and is ready to take that job as a number one catcher.
That's a great point. I mean, between the catching position and hopefully Ryan Ludwig being healthier in left field, those are two pretty rich positions in terms of upgrades. And a lot of times, Greg's right, you do tend to overlook who you've got. And I think at those two positions, left field and catcher, good opportunity to post positive numbers, whereas last year, at times, they were both black hole positions.
Yeah.
513-419-7100, if you have a question or a comment. Homer Bailey and Aroldis Chapman still not exactly signed. What are we going to see with them?
Well,
is that ever going to happen?
It's a great case. I'm presently working on a story about Homer Bailey. I've talked to Greg Rhodes about this. I should talk to Howard about it as well. The one great name in Reds history among pitchers with just electric stuff who remind me the most of Homer Bailey is none other than Johnny Vandermeer. And Johnny was actually a better pitcher. And Johnny had trouble with walks. I think Homer's problem until the last couple of years was just getting innings. But I think even now, even though he's the guy in baseball with the two no-hitters, the two reigning no-hitters, I think he struggles from outing to outing as far as consistency goes.
Yeah.
And I think that holds him back. So personally, I don't know how you guys feel about it. I'm glad the Reds didn't trade Bailey because I don't think they could have gotten value in return. I think he's poised to have potentially a Cy Young Award year this year. And if he does, look out because then Greg Rhodes is right. Then they're going to make some noise in the postseason.
Yes, then it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous rotation.
But the issue for the Reds is, I mean, and they're going to arbitration, Bailey will be eligible for free agency after this season. Does he want to take his chances on this season, maybe having a Cy Young caliber year? Because if he were to do that and then go on to the free agency market at the end of the year, I mean, that would be worth a lot of money to him. On the other hand, the Reds could work out a deal with him this year and sign him for a 3 or 4 year deal, which would certainly give him a big, huge bump in pay and the security that comes with a long-term contract. So he's got to weigh all those things. They still have to figure out the arbitration number for this year. And the same way with Chapman, they'll have to come to a decision on both of those guys. They'll both be in Reds uniforms. It's just a question of how much they're going to pay them.
Right.
And the most interesting thing to me, and we can talk about this a little bit, is the starting pitching is still great. Not just good, it's great.
Oh, it's
in fact,
great.
They've got Stevenson, the young man who came by way of Dayton, who throws in the upper 90s with command. He can locate his fastball. This guy is probably only a half season away from the majors.
That's right.
And you know, we've in this city, we've all been around, Howard longer than Greg and I even, we've all been here for 40-plus years watching this team play. And myself personally, this is the best pitching staff I remember since probably the early 70s. I mean, back when they were in the World Series, and they actually got banged up in the rotation. But they had a great starting rotation in 1970. And I think this rotation has the potential to be that good. And as long as you've got that potential, you're always going to be in the hunt.
Right. And a bullpen to back it up.
Very good bullpen.
One other change coming to baseball this year is the whole idea about home plate collisions and what you should avoid or shouldn't avoid. What's the rule? John, maybe you can explain that to us and what has changed.
Well, I think what's going to happen this year is they basically don't want they want to make sure the catcher gives the runner coming home a pathway to home plate somewhere. In other words, you can't just block the plate with that rigid left leg like you used to be able to do. I saw a collision one time with Jeff Reed. I forget who the runner was, but he was exposed totally to right field, reaching out for the throw from right field. And this runner got him just before the ball got there, drove his right shoulder right into Reed's ribcage. And I thought to myself at the time, that should be illegal. If in 1990, whatever it was, we're having this kind of a collision, this is worse than anything I've ever seen on a football field where they've got padding. So we saw it a few years ago with Buster Posey, and Johnny Bench made the point, look, Posey, you've got to give the runner a pathway to home plate. You just can't block it without the ball. And Bench's point was that give him a spot to come in. That's his spot. You take everything else. And I think that's the way this will be regulated. As long as they're giving the runner a pathway, the catcher's going to be okay. If he doesn't, then we've got issues, and I think that's where we are right now in baseball.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a good idea. And these things are dangerous, too. I mean, you know.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, they haven't ironed out all the wrinkles in that.
No.
It has not been approved
yet. That's a work
yet.
In
there
progress.
As we speak now, it's a work in progress. There is no change for next year. But it's coming. There's going to be some way to alleviate that the potential of the hazard from that home plate collision. I mean, on the other hand, I mean, we're not going to any of us sit here and say we didn't like that 1970 All-Star Game
right.
moment, or when Norm.
Yes, one of us who was an Indians fan back then will say that
Ray Fossey didn't care much for it.
No,
I mean, you don't want to see all of this stuff go away.
Or Norm Charlton taking
right.
out
Mike Socha. Yeah, right. And that was another great.
Yeah.
What about the whole idea of a new manager this year? Is that going to be a big change? We have too much waiting and seeing still because it's too soon to talk about Brian Price.
Well, I don't think it's too early to talk about it. I think what we're waiting to see from him is how friendly he is to the modern analytics of the game, which Dusty Baker wasn't at all. And secondly, is can his leadership of a great pitching staff translate to the position players, which I frankly think it can. To me, this guy's a great communicator, a great leader. I think he's going to make a difference. I think where you get in difficulty, and I heard Walt Jocketty say this the other day, the fine Reds general manager, that he's expecting it basically to be a good year for Brian Price. But I don't think you can say to yourself he's worth two or three wins because then you get into trouble. You're only as good as your players, and hopefully this roster will continue to be tweaked a little bit between now opening day, and they'll continue to get better because right now, to my way of thinking, this is about an 88-win club. They could use another three or four wins, and they're not going to get it from Brian Price, right. Unfortunately. That's too much to expect of a manager.
Anybody else?
No, everything you hear about Brian Price, you're not hearing any much caution or negative stuff. I mean, I remember reading Bronson Arroyo's comments back in the fall when Price was named manager, and I mean, the guy sounds like he does everything right. He's meticulous. He's well prepared. He sits players. He'll talk with them very frankly about what it is they got to do. There's a plan to be put in place. As far as the inspirational rah-rah stuff, that sometimes is important depending on the makeup of a team, and sometimes not so important. I don't really know Brian Price well enough to know where he falls on that, but I think he will set. And this is one of the great things about guys like Bronson. Because he set sort of a level of – there's an intensity, there's a level of commitment to practice and a discipline right. to it. And I think Price brings that to the table.
Well, one of the things that impressed me about Price was just the fact that there were other clubs out there that wanted him
right.
as a manager. I mean, he's not, you know, it's not like he just fell on his lap. I mean, he had options. And, you know, that tells me he is a good, solid baseball guy who will do the right thing.
And I think the one thing we've all heard that's refreshing from him is his willingness to use Aroldis Chapman for more than just closing out the game in the ninth inning
right.
for an out or two. He's actually willing to bring in Aroldis to pitch the eighth inning, which I think is huge because we've all seen it where your highest leverage situation, the most damage that can be done by the opposition might be in the seventh or eighth inning. Get your best arm in there then. And I think Price, what I love about him, he'll manage not – for the press conference after the game, he'll manage to win the ball game. And to me, too often Dusty was managing for the post-game discussion because he didn't want to look bad. In Brian Price's case, he just wants to win the game, period, and I think you'll see him manage that way.
Greg, you brought up Bronson Arroyo. How much is he going to be missed?
Well, I personally, I'll miss him a lot. I mean, there was nobody I wanted to go down there and see pitch any more than Bronson Arroyo. Anybody can get guys out with a 69-mile-an-hour pitch in the major leagues is doing something that's worth watching. I mean, I just love watching him work. And he was so analytical about what he did and strategic about the way he approached the game. Just from a fan standpoint, I'm really going to miss him. But I think the rotation is strong enough and deep enough. I mean, you've got two guys coming back, Cingrani and Johnny Cueto, who were fighting injuries at the end of the season, and you hope that they're both going to be able to go. And then you've got this young kid, the Stevenson kid, who's been in the high minor leagues the last couple of years and who looks pretty close to ready, plus the other regulars in the rotation. I mean, it should still be a very good pitching staff.
And you know, you brought up the name of Cueto. That's really a huge name. That's another position from which they could get a lot of upside. He did not have a good year last year. He was banged up most of the time. So if he comes back strong, Katie barred the door.
That's right. Yeah. And the thing I'll miss about Arroyo is everybody talks about leadership on this team, and he was a leader. I mean, he was a leader among that staff, and he would help young pitchers. And, you know, I think that is going to be a missing element.
And he played lead guitar.
He did. Yeah. And he did a lot of good covers.
The leader of the band, too.
Right. John, I don't want to end without giving you a chance to talk about the Hall of Fame vote this year.
Yes, it was very interesting. In fact, the other day I spoke to Greg Rowe's class, and he told his class that I was there in 1936 when they voted in the first Hall of Fame class. And I said, well, that's not true. I wasn't there then, but I might have actually been one of those guys, had I been there, that might have left Babe Ruth off my first ballot. I kid, of course. This was a great Hall of Fame season in terms of the vote. It was the most crowded ballot probably since 1936. It's going to be crowded again next year, and I actually look for a little bit of reform between now and next year, whether we might be able to expand the vote to the broadcasters, to the stats guys who provide stats to the major league clubs, and maybe even major league media relations department. So we'll see what happens. But I think right now the Hall of Fame is in very good shape. The ballot's a little bit too crowded. We got to probably thin it out a little bit, maybe add a couple more blanks to the ballot. So instead of only voting for 10, maybe you can vote for 12 or 15. But basically, it was a great year. It's going to be a crowded day us in Cooperstown this year. Three great players. And
remind us who's going
sure,
in.
Sure. Greg Maddux, his teammate Tom Glavin, and the great slugger Frank Thomas from Chicago. Three managers going in as well. Tony La Russa, Bobby Cox, and Joe Torre. So it's going to be a lot of fun in Cooperstown.
You're going to have half of Atlanta show up.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be a good time.
In Cooperstown this year.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Anything we left out that you wanted to say, oh, my gosh, we didn't talk about that? We'll have you back when we get closer, but on this very snowy day, I don't think we could have picked, at least in my mind, a better day to talk about baseball.
I agree. It's always a pleasure, Marianne.
Absolutely, Marianne. Thank you.
This has been Cincinnati Edition, talking about baseball this afternoon. Pitchers and catchers report 24 days. Spring training, my guess. Inquirer sports reporter John Arardi, Reds team historian Greg Rhodes, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. In a moment, we'll hear about the future of Northern Kentucky from Vision 2015.